The underway branched and divided. She picked her way at random, ducking through tunnels, running and stumbling and weaving. Behind her strolled Mr. Croup and Mr. Vandemar, as calmly and cheerfully as Victorian dignitaries visiting the Crystal Palace exhibition. When they arrived at a crossroads, Mr. Croup would kneel and find the nearest spot of blood, and they would follow it. They were like hyenas, exhausting their prey. They could wait. They had all the time in the world. Luck was with Richard for a change. He caught a black taxi, driven by a particularly enthusiastic taxi driver who took Richard home by an unlikely route involving streets Richard had never previously noticed while holding forth, as Richard had discovered all London taxi drivers will hold forth, given a living, breathing, English-speaking passenger, on London's inner-city traffic problems, how best to deal with crime, and thorny political issues of the day. Richard jumped out of the cab, leaving a tip and his briefcase behind, managed to flag down the cab again before it made it into the main road and so got his briefcase back. Then he ran up the stairs and into his flat. He was already shedding clothes as he entered the hall. His briefcase spun across the room and crash-landed on the sofa. He took his keys from his pocket and placed them carefully on the hall table in order to ensure he did not forget them. Then he dashed into the bedroom. The buzzer sounded. Richard, three quarters of the way into his best suit, launched himself at the entry phone. "Richard, it's Jessica. I hope you're ready." "Oh, yes. Be right down." He pulled on a coat and he ran, slamming the door behind him. Jessica was waiting for him at the bottom of the stairs. She always waited for him there. Jessica didn't like Richard's flat. It made her feel uncomfortably female. There was always the chance of finding a pair of Richard's underwear, well, anywhere. Not to mention the wandering lumps of congealed toothpaste on the bathroom sink. No, it was not a Jessica kind of place. Jessica was very beautiful. So much so, Richard would occasionally find himself staring at her, wondering, how did she end up with me? And when they made love, which they did at Jessica's Muse flat in fashionable Kensington, in Jessica's brass bed with the crisp white linen sheets, for Jessica's parents had told her that eiderdowns were decadent. In the darkness, afterwards, she would hold him very tightly, and her long brown curls would tumble over his chest, and she would whisper to him how much she loved him, and he would tell her he loved her and always wanted to be with her, and they both believed it to be true. "Bless me, Mr. Vandemar. She's slowing up." "Slowing up, Mr. Croup?" "She must be losing a lot of blood, Mr. V."
"Lovely blood, Mr. C. Lovely wet blood."
"Not long now." A click. The sound of a switchblade opening, empty and lonely and dark. "Richard, what are you doing?" asked Jessica. "Nothing, Jessica. You haven't forgotten your keys again, have you?"
"No, Jessica."
Richard stopped patting himself and pushed his hands deep into the pockets of his coat. "Now, when you meet Mr. Stockton tonight," said Jessica, "you have to appreciate that he's not just a very important man. He's also a corporate entity in his own right."
"I can't wait," sighed Richard.
"What was that, Richard?"
"I can't wait," said Richard rather more enthusiastically.
"Oh, do step lively," said Jessica, who was beginning to exude an aura of what, in a lesser woman, might almost have been described as nerves. "We mustn't keep Mr. Stockton waiting."
"No, Jess."
"Don't call me that, Richard. I loathe pet names. They're so demeaning."
"Spare any change?"
The man sat in a doorway. His beard was yellow and grey, and his eyes were sunken and dark. A hand-lettered sign hung from a piece of frayed string around his neck and rested on his chest, telling anyone with the eyes to read it that he was homeless and hungry. It didn't take a sign to tell you that. Richard, hand already in his pocket, fumbled for a coin.
Richard, we haven't got the time, said Jessica, who gave to charity and invested ethically. Now, I do want you to make a good impression, fiancé-wise. It is vital that a future spouse makes a good impression. And then her face creased, and she hugged him for a moment and said, Oh, Richard, I do love you. You do know that, don't you? And Richard nodded, and he did. Jessica checked her watch and increased her pace. Richard discreetly flicked a pound coin back through the air towards the man in the doorway who caught it in one grimy hand. There wasn't any problem with the reservations, was there? Asked Jessica. And Richard, who was not much good at lying when faced with a direct question, said, Ah. She'd chosen wrongly. The corridor ended in a blank wall. Normally that would hardly have given her pause, but she was so tired, so hungry, in so much pain. She leaned against the wall, feeling the brick roughness against her face. She was gulping breath, hiccuping and sobbing. Her arm was cold, and her left hand was numb. She could go no further, and the world was beginning to feel very distant. She wanted to stop, to lie down and to sleep for 100 years.
Oh, bless my little black soul, Mr. Vandemeyer, do you see what I see?
The voice was soft, close. They must have been nearer to her than she had imagined.
I spy with my little eye something that's going to be...
Dead in a minute, Mr. Croup, said the flat voice from above her.
Our principal will be delighted.
And the girl pulled whatever she could find deep inside her soul from all the pain and the hurt and the fear. She was spent, burnt out, and utterly exhausted. She had nowhere to go, no power left, no time. If it's the last door I open, she prayed silently to the temple, to the arch. Somewhere, anywhere, safe. And then she thought, wildly, somebody. And as she began to pass out, she tried to open a door. As the darkness took her, she heard Mr. Croup's voice as if from a long way away. It said, Bugger and blast.